Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore and the games of Blizzard Entertainment. I'm Ann Stickney, one of two lore-focused writers from Blizzard Watch, and I've got both of the usual suspects with me today as far as co-hosts go. First up, he's the other lore-focused writer over on Blizzard Watch, and that would be Matt Rossi. Hey, Rossi!
Hello, everybody.
That's it? Just a hello, everybody?
Yep, pretty much.
How you doing?
Fine. Yeah. Hello, everybody.
Okay, we'll just leave it at that. Second up, we've got our other co-host, who is our Shalman columnist, but he's also really versed in lore as well, and that would be Joe Perez. Hey, Joe.
Well, hello, everybody.
How's it going?
I am full of very delicious sushi, so very, very good today.
Oh, okay. Well, sushi...
That was my reward for having to work today.
I can't even talk today. I'm like, sushi? Sushi. Yay! Great. So, this week was actually kind of a big one in terms of World of Warcraft, which is what we're going to be talking about today, because that's what we usually end up talking about. One of these days we're going to have to do another Overwatch one again, but World of Warcraft, Antorus came out, and of course with Antorus being released, that means that people buzzsawed their way through the whole thing, got to the end, and unlocked the final cinematic for the raid, which was pretty interesting. Needless to say, this episode is going to be full of spoilers for the end of Antorus and possibly leading into beginning of Battle for Azeroth. If you're avoiding any of that information, you may want to hold off and like come back after you have seen all of it for yourself. So this is your fair warning. Woe betide any of you who listen beyond this point and do not want to be spoiled, because it's just going to happen immediately, okay? All right. So, cinematic. There were several cinematics actually involved with Antorus, because we had like those lead up unlock cinematics where you went and talked to Magni and did his quests, and then you had one before the final boss fight, which was with Argus the Unmaker, and then you had the final cinematic of the whole thing. And I kind of want to talk about all of them as a whole, I guess, because I don't know, I feel like this is the first raid in a long time that's been chock full of cinematics, like, the whole way through. What do you
guys
think?
Even before the raid was even released?
Yeah, it was like, there was like a cinematic lead up to it, and then within the raid itself, there was a lot of story involved. Obviously, I haven't been in Antorus myself, because I don't have a raid guild. I do LFR. Sorry, guys. But as far as that goes, I have been following other people's progress and following what's been going on in there. And it seems like there's a really involved story that just kind of weaves its way through the entire raid. Are either of you guys in a raid guild where you're actively raiding right now?
Yep, I am.
Have you been all the way through?
No, mostly because... So, non-lore wise, real quick, just... The variety of mechanics in Antorus is far and above anything that they've ever done before, which is very ambitious, and I enjoy this. Right. But it does make for some interesting learning curves. That said, what I have gotten to go through has been absolutely fantastic. And it's everything that leads up to it, it perfectly slots in and fits in as you see the different pieces. And I think that's really important, and it's really cool, because one of the things that I always had a gripe with over all the years of raiding is that, you know, boom, here's a raid, and maybe here's a little quest that leads up to it, and then everything else is just done in the raid. The fact that they've done everything with, like, the Magni cinematics leading up to it, showing you not just, like, the first encounter of the raid, but very deep into the raid, what you're going to see, what you can expect, and unveiling that story in these little sort of weekly snippets was really good, because it gave me a sense of intrigue that I haven't had in any other raid. Maybe closest would be something like Ice Crown Citadel would probably be the next closest. But the presentation of the story inside of it complements it so well, whether it's the comments that the NPCs and bosses make while you're in there, or whether it's just going back and reflecting on, okay, this is the environment from the cinematic, and you notice all these little things from there that sort of add this sort of immersive nature to it. I got to give them props for that. I think this is probably one of the coolest setups for a raid that they've done ever.
I feel like as the expansions have gone on, it's like that first tier or two of raids aren't necessarily the most story heavy. Legion mm-hmm. has done a really good job of making them story heavy, because obviously
and the dungeons.
The Nightmare has like this whole overarching thing in it that we eventually resolve, and then we have the Nighthold, which has this whole overarching thing in it that we resolve. Tomb of Sargeras and now Antorus, like each of them have been really heavy on the story, whereas you go back to, well, you look at Warlords of Draenor, Hellfire Citadel actually had like a story going on in it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't really speak to as, I mean, we know how I feel about Warlords. It felt very disjointed to me, and it was like the raids
were too.
The raids that were in there, they were presented. I mean, the raids themselves were interesting. The stuff that went on inside them was interesting, but it felt really disjointed as a whole. And then you go back to Mists of Pandaria and those early raids. I mean, yeah, there was kind of a reason for us to be there, but it wasn't really until the Isle of Thunder and Siege of Orgrimmar mm-hmm. that the story element really started kicking in. And it was the same thing with Cataclysm. You didn't really see it start kicking in to high gear and kind of addressing the entirety of the expansion until you got to Dragon Soul.
Now, I will say that the only other expansion that I think has done a very good job of weaving at least a attempt at a cohesive story or a thread between all of the raids and dungeons, honestly, was Burning Crusade. And everything evolved, whether we wanted to or not, it revolved around Illidan and what was going on there.
I didn't quite get it as well, though, with Burning Crusade.
It wasn't as refined, but it was there. The attempt was there.
The attempts and were there, and the threads were
being
pulled.
This is the refined nature of it.
Yeah, the threads were being kind of pulled into place. It felt like Black Temple, out of all of the raids, the one that we should have been most concerned with, it felt like Black Temple was kind of slapped on at the end. And that I think that was mostly because Illidan didn't really have
a presence,
a major presence throughout the expansion. Yeah. And then, of course, you know, we went into overdrive with Wrath of the Lich King, where Arthas just literally showed up everywhere. Like, you stop to sell things at a vendor, and Arthas would show up, taunt you, and then disappear.
you die, he's still there. But they did a really good job here of, with very few exceptions, I'm not going to say everything ties together, because the stuff with Odin, while important, I wouldn't say necessarily ties in as deeply as I would have liked with some of the other stuff.
I always forget about the Halls of Valor? Yeah. I always forget. I don't think I've even done that one on LFR. I think I still need to go do that one on LFR, but it doesn't like...
It's its own self-contained thing versus the other ones, right?
Yeah.
But with everything else ties together, at least has a thread in which it sort of pulls here, and it's a cohesive story, at least for the most part, from start to finish, with that one little hiccup. And I'm okay with that.
How do you feel about the raids and the story overall in Legion, Rossi?
I kind of feel like I'm going to be the person out here, because I feel like Antorus doesn't have a lot to support it until this expansion. We never heard about any of this stuff before. So to me, Tomb of Sargeras felt like the place to stop. Like, I felt from the beginning like Legion should have ended with Tomb of Sargeras, and Argus should have been its own expansion. Like, I really feel like they put two expansions in here, and they could have done more to develop both of them, which is weird to say, and I'm not sure exactly how to put it. Like, the Broken Shore felt strange and disjointed to me. Like, it's like, why are we doing all this weird stuff just so we that we can like lead up to Tomb of Sargeras? Why don't we just go in? I've always felt that way. Tomb of Sargeras itself, I think, is a really good raid. I think there's a lot of the very interesting lore in that place, and a lot of it we haven't really dealt with yet. And that's my problem with the lore throughout Legion, is it feels like we barely skim the surface of this stuff. Like the Emerald Nightmare and so forth really felt like, okay, now what? And didn't get finished. The
it's
Nighthold,
like there's a dangling thread there, and we know we're going to pick that up again at some point.
Nighthold, very much, it feels like that's a raid that's going to haunt us for years to come once BFA comes out. Tomb of Sargeras, I thought, was really well done, but I really felt like the Broken Shore itself wasn't as well done and didn't really contribute to the feel as much as it could have. And as for Antorus and Argus, they've both been incredible. I don't have anything against them. I haven't got a chance to go in and actually see Antorus yet. My guild that I'm kind of semi-active with is going to be raiding it again this week, and hopefully I'll get to go in. But in general, I feel like we've had, like, this last patch was an expansion's worth. Like, with, like, one or two more zones, Argus could have been
an entire expansion.
It's just amazing to me just how much was in this patch. So I don't know. I feel like Antorus is pretty amazing taken on its own, but it does feel kind of like, oh, and by the way, there's this place where, you know, all this stuff has been going on this whole time that we never mentioned before ever. And the planet Argus has a soul, and that soul is going, it turns out that it does have a world soul, and that world soul is going to be, oh, and the seat of the Pantheon's over this way. I still want to know, like, there's a lot of stuff where we're going to other worlds inside Antorus. Like, we're not staying in Antorus. Like, there's at least two encounters take place completely outside of that raid. They're not in it at all.
Yeah, and you there's also a little room, too, where you get to see a whole bunch of different planets, too. There's, like, a whole portal set up.
Yeah, so it feels like, again, I feel like Legion, as an expansion, suffers maybe from having just so much stuff crammed in. I guess that's a better problem to have than the, you know, Warlord's problem.
I was going to say, I would rather have Legion's problem than Warlord's problem. I'm just saying.
I got you. I understand that. But doesn't it
I'll
feel
drink
like
from that cup.
Between Warlords and Legion, they could have put some of this in Warlords and done Warlords differently. I don't know. It feels like Warlords is half an expansion, and it feels like Legion is, well, one and a half expansions.
I'll give Anne credit for this one too, for the idea, because like I think she hit the nail on the head. Warlords was sort of like this interstitial expansion, right? Like it was this sort of in between. Yeah,
it was the bridge. I don't think that bridge needed to be there. Honestly, if I were going to put anything in that, you know how I said, oh gosh, it would have made sense to have like Legion show up and then Warlords after that? You know what would have made more sense? Have Battle for Azeroth show up and then Legion. And then maybe Warlords after that.
See, I don't know if I agree with that, because I think a lot of the stuff from Battle is very dependent on what's happening in Legion.
It is, and I get that, because like a lot of the stuff, I mean, obviously, we've warned people about spoilers. The whole wound in the earth thing that leads into the whole Battle of Azeroth thing. And you know, that's kind of like the fomenting source of this antagonizing between the Alliance and Horde, which has been going on for years and years and years. At the same time, I feel like they could have put that all-out brutal war back-and-forth thing right after Mists of Pandaria, right after when we were still fresh from the Siege of Orgrimmar. You know, maybe have more people that were angry, that kind of thing. I don't.
Maybe, but here's my thing, why I don't agree with that. I think to a certain degree, the reason Battle for Azeroth is going to be interesting is that it is Sylvanas and Anduin in charge.
Well, that's what I was just going to get to, but you interrupted me there. I was going to say, I didn't think that it would have quite the dramatic impact. That's where I was kind of stepping back a little from that, because I was like, wait, no, because then Varian would still be alive. Now, would it have been nice to give like another chapter to Varian's story? Yeah, probably, because we didn't see a lot of him in Warlords, and what we saw of him in Mists of Pandaria and coming out of Mists of Pandaria was a Varian that was a little more tempered and a little bit, you know, he had more of a solid head on his shoulders and was making sense, that kind of thing. And I kind of would have liked to have seen that Varian be a leader a little bit more, because it feels like a lot of Varian's story was about his whole internal struggle thing. And every time he seemed to get that resolved, something else would come up that would kick that back into high gear. So it was like he finally got all that settled. We got Mists of Pandaria, where he was like, you know, he seemed to be, I mean, obviously he was concerned for the welfare of his son, but beyond that, the whole domineering father angle had kind of relaxed a little bit, and he'd gone on to be more of a tempered leader, willing to listen to everybody and take everybody's input into consideration and that kind of thing. And then we didn't see him again until he got the axe. You know what I mean? It feels like Blizzard has this problem, and I don't know if it's like a story problem, like a story writing problem or whatever. If a character isn't going through some kind of conflict, they don't want to focus on them at all. Like, they don't want to show these characters triumphs. They just want to highlight the struggles. And then once it seems that they've overcome those struggles, they get rid of them.
Yeah.
So, like, Jaina had this whole thing where, obviously, you know, the whole thing about Theramore and all of that. And in War Crimes, it felt like she had maybe reached that resolution, but we never got to see the results of that resolution. All we saw was a minor appearance in Warlords of Draenor, where it was obvious that she hadn't reached that resolution that we thought she did in War Crimes, and that carried on into Legion, and she had just been kind of shoved to the side. And I know I focus on Jaina a lot here, but that's because I like Jaina as a character. But the thing is you can apply the same thing to Varian. Varian had just achieved that balance and that kind of tempered leadership, and then all of a sudden, he's gone. Vol'jin had finally gotten some kind of story. He even got a novel. Like, he got a novel, and he got, like, this whole intriguing element where he was, like, the leader of the rebellion against Garrosh Hellscream and all of that throughout Mists of Pandaria. And then what happened after he was appointed war chief? Absolutely nothing. He died. That was it. The end. And
yeah,
I want to see these guys' successes.
I'm just going to say this. Woe betide the Blizzard employee that pitches the idea of killing Anduin in the middle of the next expansion, because you're going to have a bad time.
Christie's got a kill board, guys.
Yeah, I will say, though, to answer the original question you asked was, what do I feel about Legion?
Yeah.
I will say that overall, like I said, Legion's biggest flaw is that it has too much going on, which, if you're going to have a flaw, that's the flaw to have. I don't think we can argue. I think we just basically made that really clear in the discussion just now. But the other thing I think to be pointed out is that Legion does something even Mists couldn't do. Mists had a lot of content. It had a lot of, like, lore happen in it. Legion invented whole stuff, a lot of new stuff, whole cloth, because that's what Antorus is. Antorus, the surface of Argus, the other worlds we go to, a lot of stuff that happens in this expansion is brand new. The Nightborne didn't even exist as an idea before this expansion. Now they're going to be like a major deal allied race. Legion is actually, as much as it's closed some doors, it's actually opened a lot more. And It also did something we never thought we'd actually get to see, in that it gave Illidan a story. Illidan didn't have a story in BC at all.
Yeah, I feel like this was kind of the redemption arc swan song for Illidan Stormrage, where all of those people, myself included, that looked at Burning Crusade and went, wait, he was on the box, but we barely saw him. And I mean, I was raiding. I got to kill Illidan when he was current content and everything. And it felt like kind of anticlimactic. It was like, well, he was there. We killed him. I got a
Warglaive.
Oh, yeah,
That was my biggest gripe at the time, is he's supposed to be this big bad, and he's supposed to be the driving force of this entire expansion, and yet I see him three times.
Yeah, in its own way, I feel like Legion kind of feels like Burning Crusade Part 2. It was like, it's like, here's the story of Burning Crusade, only told in a really coherent fashion.
That's kind of where I was going to go earlier with it, when I was talking about the only other expansion that I felt did exactly, or at least tried to do what Legion has, was Burning Crusade. It's the two are married.
It feels like, and I mean, you guys can argue about this if you want to. To me, when I was playing Burning Crusade, right? When I was back playing Burning Crusade, and this was before I was writing about World of Warcraft a lot or anything, I was just really kind of entrenched in the lore and paying attention to it. It felt like Tempest Keep was that surprise gotcha at the end. I didn't really follow spoilers or anything. I just followed what I was reading and seeing in-game and, you know, the novels and things like that. So when that all came out and was kind of announced, it was like, oh my gosh, there's like this added coda at the end of all of this. Like, we thought we were done with Black Temple, but nope, there's another thing here. Argus feels like that to me. where it was like, okay, we went to Tomb of Sargeras, we got all this done and dealt with and everything, and then all of a sudden, oops, nope, wait, there's a giant planet in the sky, we had to go deal with that thing. Only Argus is like 10 times bigger and better than Tempest Keep and the Isle of Kildonis ever was.
Oh, you mean the Sunwell?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry, I was confused.
Not Tempest Keep. The Sunwell. I'm sorry. It's been a long day. The Sunwell, not Tempest Keep.
Tempest Keep was there from the beginning.
Right. I'm thinking about Kael'thas, and Kael'thas was originally in Tempest Keep. I just went there the other day to go get a vial. Anyway, no, the Sunwell. The Sunwell and the Isle of Kildonis. That whole thing popped up at the end of it all, and I wasn't really expecting it as a player. And, you know, maybe I wasn't as good at looking for hints and things like that at that point in time. But it just...
I definitely think there's a certain amount of similarity between how Isle of Kildonis and Sunwell rolled out and how Argus and Antorus rolled out. The main difference is like the epilogue, almost, or like an
additional chapter that you weren't quite expecting, but all of a sudden, oops, it's there.
It's doing the thing that I think it's a mark of, to me, what a good expansion does or what a good cycle in a game does, which is you tie up whatever loose ends you have your thread going for the entire time, and then you build upon it into something that leads into either opening more doors, opening more threads, and sort of, you know, kind of continuing that push, that drive to keep going, versus Warlords, which really didn't, right? Like, that's what they're doing here. They're doing all that thing, like just like Rossi said, they may be, you know, tying all these loose ends up for some things, but they're creating brand new things, brand new threads. They're introducing new fabric to that tapestry. And that's the good thing, right? And
let's be upfront with something, because I feel like we should just talk about it, because we said we were going to talk about the cinematics. At the end of this expansion, we still don't know a lot.
And oh, yeah.
One of the things we don't know is the final fate of Sargeras and the Pantheon. We do not know exactly what happens to them. We know they do something that supposedly traps Sargeras, but let's be honest, anytime Blizzard decided they wanted to bring them back, they have a giant door to do so. And that's what that cinematic
does. There's a blip
does.
In the sky that could reopen. Yeah.
And that cinematic, in the cinematic before that cinematic, also sets that up as well.
Yeah, absolutely it does.
How so? Explain, Joe.
Because you have, okay, so we're operating under the assumption that the Pantheon is using all of their collective energies to keep Sargeras imprisoned, right? That's why Illidan's is, again, this is why Illidan's staying behind, this is why the Pantheon's staying behind, and they're saying, go mortals, it's your time to shine, blah, blah, blah. However, before that, in the cinematic that leads up to the fight with Argus the Unmaker, the Pantheon's burning their energy. They're burning their energy to force Argus to manifest. We don't know how much of that they get back, if any, or how much energy they really had at the end of that whole eternity of struggle that they've been going through since, you know, they've been trying to be broken for how many thousands of years at this point? You know, with the exception of Aenar, I mean, they could be incredibly weak. Sargeras could break free. Like, it's a thing that could happen. He hasn't been weak. Like, we sort of beat his booty years ago, but he was still strong enough to push the Legion forward, to do everything he needed to do, to create an entire engine of souls on another planet, to birth a brand new Titan. Like, he was powerful enough to get all these things in motion while the other ones were disembodied souls being tortured in his factory. Like, so what they did, we don't know the lasting effects of it, because we don't know how much power they had left. We don't know how much juice was left in their batteries.
Okay, Rossi, go ahead and continue. Sorry.
The other thing to keep in mind, too, is that we don't know, like, we know that the next expansion deals with the consequences of what we just see in that cinematic. We know that.
And let's just flat out say it. Sargeras plunges his sword into Azeroth.
Yeah.
Silithus is done.
Silithus is toast. It is the quarterback. But when this happens, we see him summon his blade and jam it into the world. And then he lets it go, and when he's pulled back, what's interesting too is there's kind of a translation difference. Like, he is planet sized when they grab him. Like, he is the size of Azeroth. He is like, he is so big that he is like literally a giant cloud climbing on the planet. And then they pull him out, and when they pull him to the seat of the Pantheon, he is different. He is smaller. So there's a translation deal. Being in the seat of the Pantheon seems to translate them.
Well,
they seem to get smaller.
They're pulling him, and they're also draining his power while they're pulling him. So I don't know if that attributes for the size shift or what. But
that's the thing. We don't know. There's a lot we don't know here. We know that Illidan's kind of understood this was going to happen. Whether or not he foresaw it or just expected it, he prepares himself. He gives you a crystal to take back to his brother and his brother's wife, who he still has a thing for. I'm gonna give Illidan credit for still having a thing for someone after that many thousands of years. You know, dude, you need to learn to let go. But he didn't, and that's why we're still alive. So anyway, there's a lot going on here that we don't know yet what it means. We don't know what it's going to, like, the Legion is broken at the end of this. It's fair to say this. The Legion, it doesn't have Kil'jaeden, it doesn't have Archimonde, and it doesn't have Sargeras. So it doesn't have its big leaders anymore. And we have no idea, like, are they dead for good? Because Antorus was still up and running when we killed both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And Antorus, even if you die in the Nether, Antorus pulls you out, you get tortured for a while, then you get to come back. Was that happening for Kil'jaeden in Archimonde? When we go into Antorus, do we screw that up, or do they end up getting loose sooner? Like, what's going to happen now? Are they coming back? We don't know.
Well, and that's the thing. We have no idea. Like, and there's this theory running around that the soul of Argus is the sort of the fuel that burned that, which is without him or without it, the engine can't run. But there's nothing that confirms that. There's nothing that flat out says that.
And for, like, that matter, even if it's the case, we know that demon souls went back to the Nether to be reborn before Argus. That's flat out established. We know
this has sped it up.
So without Argus there, do they then go forth into the Nether to be reborn the old-fashioned way? Like, there's a lot here that they've left the door open on. We the Legion is as gone as they want it to be. And I think that's important, because while we're focusing on new threats and new stuff coming down the pike, and we've gotten, like, there's a chance here that we really could get some outright new stuff, because not only do we get new stuff in this expansion, but we've been shown new worlds.
Yep.
You know, after Battle for Azeroth, we don't know what's coming next. And this expansion is the first one since Mists to do that. That's what makes Warlords such a weird interruption, because Warlords isn't new stuff at all. Warlords is, remember all that old stuff? This is it, kind of different. And that's why it's always felt really strange to me. I heard an inhalation of someone who wanted to talk, and then they didn't, so I'm confused.
To me, Warlords was kind of like, it felt like they wanted to retell and or rehighlight these stories of old that maybe people weren't too familiar with because they didn't play the RTS games or whatever. So they wanted to show, you know, what had gone down on Draenor. They wanted to show all of that all over again for, like, a new audience. But that story wasn't really told effectively at all. It turned into something else entirely.
We've all said that Warlords did really well up front. Like, its leveling experience was really good. And I think that's, to a certain degree, Legion took that ball and ran with it, while at the same time taking what Mists did really well.
With the endgame stuff.
Yeah. Mists did its endgame really, really well. I think that's not really disputable. It's unfortunate that that had a year and a half or so before it was finally, like, done and we could go to something else. Hopefully Legion won't have that. But definitely I feel like this expansion and this raid in particular, I don't want to say it's the best raid they've ever done, because I haven't gotten into it yet. But it feels like the most cohesive raid they've ever done, where they really did sit down and say, okay, what have we been doing all expansion? What have we been... And we're not going to be coy anymore. We're not going to try and, like, hide things. We're going to just flat out throw them.
It's like there's this threaded story throughout the raid that really wraps up the expansion. And Siege of Orgrimmar kind of did that, except that it was left open-ended at the end. And then we got that wrapped up in a novel. Legion, I don't think that it was left open-ended per se. There's room for us to move on. It's like, here's the end of this chapter, now we can go ahead and do a new one. Whereas with Mists of Pandaria, it felt like, here's the end of the chapter, by the way, we caught Garrosh Hellscream, you're not going to figure out what happens to him until you read the novel that's coming out, you know. This one, it feels like you don't need to read a novel to understand the end of the expansion. And the novel that Christy Golden is coming up with right now is well and truly, it's a bridge. It's a bridge where you don't need to read it to understand the expansion. it's just additional material leading into the next one. You know what I mean?
No, I think I agree. What's interesting is we were talking about it before, and you said that you felt like Warlords was kind of an interstitial expansion where...
Yeah.
And that's, if you think about it, Battle for Azeroth basically has a Warlords happening before it in novel form, rather than having to actually like play through it.
Kind of.
And
yeah.
I think maybe that's the best use for novels in terms of lore, is to set up something without actually like having to be like, I don't know. I honestly feel like we could have done, there's lots of ways they could have had Gul'dan come back. They could have just said, oh, well, he was so corrupted by demons that they, you know, when Illidan drained
this
the spell
is
of
like,
Gul'dan, blah, blah,
this is
whatever.
Like, I mean, okay, this was my major complaint with Warlords of Draenor, is that when I went back, and I mean, I wrote up, it was like a review of Warlords lore or something like that. It was my year-end review, and it was addressing the end of Warlords. And I said, when we take a look at Warlords of Draenor, what did we get from this expansion? We got the attention of the Burning Legion. Well, we had that already, so we didn't really need, like, additional reason for it to pop up. And then we got Gul'dan, and... we could have gotten him already, because, I mean, yes, he was shredded apart by demons or whatever when he went to open the Tomb of Sargeras back during what it was like in the middle of the Second War, near the end of the Second War, is when he ditched Orgrim Doomhammer and the Horde and just went to go seize his own power, and then he was killed. All they had to do was make a change. All they had to do was say, oh, no, he wasn't killed. You thought he was killed, but he was actually assimilated into the Legion. And because he's assimilated into the Legion, that means that he doesn't really die. And also, he's been sent back to Azeroth now to open the Tomb of Sargeras and actually work as the Legion's servant.
They could even have done something.
They could have done
like,
that.
Like, the thing that always kept to my mind was that they could have totally done a thing where they had Illidan's body trapped in the Vault of the Wardens, just like we saw. But since he had absorbed Gul'dan, when we, quote-unquote, killed Illidan, Gul'dan eventually oozed out of him and took the body. And it would have been just like we saw before. You know, maybe there's a warden he corrupted on the way, and boom, we got to corrupt a warden now since that's important. And you could have had pretty much everything we had before. I don't... But that's not to say that Warlords wasn't at all useful. It didn't have things in it that were good. But the point... I think what I'm trying to make here is that Legion manages to be very consistent, even with its, even when it reaches too far, it does so in a manner that you can follow. It does so in a consistent manner with itself. It is very self-contained. Whereas I don't think even Mists manage that. The only one I can think of that really came close to being this self-contained is Wrath. Actually, I think Legion, I mean, Burning Crusade failed utterly to be self-contained. In that way, Burning Crusade is actually the worst expansion, in that its story is so scattered and so, like, I think one of the best raids in Burning Crusade for lore was Zul'aman, which had nothing to do with anything else that
was
happening.
I mean, Burning Crusade, it felt like, okay, so when you look at classic World of Warcraft, vanilla World of Warcraft, when you look at that, the story was kind of disjointed and all over the place. It didn't really tie together. It was just a series of separate chapters that didn't really have anything to do with each other.
Very
except
much
that
like
they,
an RTS.
A comic book, really.
Except that they all presented this major threat to Azeroth. Okay, whatever. You get to Burning Crusade and you start to see this like progressive attempt to tell like a cohesive story. It's like the beginnings of it. And there's still some of that holdover from vanilla where it's like, oh, let's introduce this little bit of story here too, because that'd be interesting. And once we get into Wrath, that's when they start refining it. And they've just been refining it with like every expansion since. I feel like Legion is probably the pinnacle of all of that. There are still those random elements being presented. I mean, yes, you look at Halls of Valor and go, okay, well, what was going on there? I'm sure we'll see that pop up again at some point. But it
I think
did,
that's going to be one that haunts us. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it did kind of fold in, though, and carry through with everything else. Like, it had weight on everything else in the expansion. Everything that played through Legion had weight on everything else in the expansion. And I think this is the first time that it's really done that. I don't know if it quite ekes out Mists of Pandaria as my favorite expansion to date, but it's right up there. I mean, I think the two are tied at this point. I need to actually like play through Antorus, and since I do that on LFR, it's going to be a while before I see the end of Antorus. But from what I've seen, all of the lore coming out of Antorus, I'm like, yeah, okay, no, this is really satisfactory what they did here. The only thing that might kick mists out of the way, and it's got nothing to do with Mists of Pandaria. Is just, if we don't have to wait a year and a half for the next expansion, that'd be ideal. That would make this pretty perfect.
If we get a new expansion in 2018, I think this is going to seal Legion as one of the best expansions.
Yeah.
Because it will have actually wrapped itself up and then not made us spend too much time in the same place. Plus, I mean, there could be like a little bit more content coming when we get Time Walking Ulduar.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, if we get a little bit more content as well, that's always nice. That's gravy.
It definitely
feels like we're going to get more content in 7.3.5 because there's a lot of stuff being data mined, but we don't know yet.
You know, and they keep saying all of the Allied Races stuff that we're seeing is just, it's like, oh, this is in there because it's part of the stuff that's coming in the next expansion. It's not necessarily blah, 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 blah. But the more that I'm seeing of all of this Allied Race stuff that's being pulled out, the more I'm like, are they going to give this to us a little early? Like,
I don't know. I mean, that's what I've been thinking.
Obviously not the Zandalari, because the Zandalari are like...
But some of it would make sense, right? Like, if you did, like, the Nightborn and the, you know, Lightforged, and then you have the High Mountain Tauren, like, it would make sense that maybe their story starts at the end of Legion with us, right? Because...
I'm going to say something that weird about that, though. I don't think lore-wise, I feel really strange. It feels like the Horde got everybody who was from Azeroth to be their allied races. Like, everybody who was from this planet, like the one that we're, you know, the one that we're supposedly saving, joined up with the Horde. And everybody who was already out there fighting the Legion joined up with the Alliance. And that's just really odd to me. Like,
the Horde
goes out there too. Why are the Lightforged so quick to be like, whatever?
I'm pretty sure that the Lightforged would obviously go with the Alliance because Tyrallion is 100%.
Yeah, that's going to be the big... That's going to be the big selling
the
thing.
The Void Elves aren't from elsewhere. I don't know. We don't know much about the Void Elves or like where they come from just yet.
I've read a little about it, like the spoiler stuff. I read it. So
yeah,
I haven't read the spoiler stuff yet.
But
it's still strange to me, like, that Alaria's leading a faction. Like, then again, you know, Alaria's not going to join a Horde faction.
No way is she going to.
But, you know, if we're dealing with elves, those are from Azeroth. And then the other...
Dark Iron Dwarves are already from Azeroth.
I was going to say, the other allied race is Dark Iron Dwarves, and they are very much from Azeroth. So I don't...
Yeah, but we don't know anything about what they... Like you mentioned with the Zandalari as well. The Zandalari and the Dark Irons we're going to be meeting are not connected to Dark Irons we've already met.
You know, Okay, I understand what you're saying in terms of with the Nightborn and the High Mountain, these are the guys that were already on Azeroth with us while we were fighting on the Broken Isles and everything, whereas the Lightforged and I were off on Argus somewhere, and they come back, and then the Void Elves come from, we don't know where, but if Alaria is leading them again, we have another person who is away from Azeroth and is coming back. Okay, so I get where you're coming from.
Bad. I'm not saying it's wrong or bad. I just say it's interesting to note that it feels an awful lot like the Alliance isn't very good at making alliances, for lack of a better way to put it. They're not.
I think that we just we ran across the wrong types of people for them to make allies with at this point.
I don't really expect the High Mountain to go with the Alliance because it's real hard to have the only other Tauren, like. The Tonka joined the Horde, even though we don't ever see them. The Tonka joined the Horde back in Wrath. The Yongol haven't joined anybody, but there's like two.
The Yongol
Tauren
are still angry and worshipping fire or whatever they're doing.
Yeah, but there's still two Tauren groups already joined the Horde. I wouldn't have expected the High Mountain to go Alliance. It would have been cool because then I could play a Tauren over on the Alliance side. But I get you. And the Nightborn thing, we've argued it to death, and I don't feel like arguing it again. I get how that works, but it's just interesting to see the Alliance not great at making alliances in this particular case. This expansion was not their time to shine on alliance making.
I mean, to be fair, they've been pretty bad at that for a long time.
I don't know. But let's go ahead and go back to the Antorus end cinematic, because the stuff that happened in there was pretty significant. Obviously, we saw what happened to Azeroth, but we also saw kind of a cohesive end to Illidan's story. The story that's played out all Legion long, really. And that story, when it started out, I was kind of uncertain about it, especially when Zerus showed up and started, you know, waxing poetic about Storm Rage. And yet, as we progressed, he kind of grew on me, and he's been growing on me. how do you guys feel about the end of Illidan, as it were? And I'm not going to say the end, because obviously it's open-ended, where if they wanted to bring him back in, they probably could. But for now, that chapter's done. How do you guys feel that went?
I actually really like how it ended. Or at least, it did a couple things that I've been begging them to do with Illidan for a very long time. First of all, they finally gave him back some form of humanity. And like, as you see him interacting, particularly with Velen, the sly smirk, the smile, the sort of the thing that he has not done in how long, he actually looks like there's a weight being lifted from him. Like, you know, it's the end of his journey. He knows it. This is everything that he's done for all these years, finally paying off. And finally, his end goal is complete, where he believes that, you know, the biggest threat that I need to deal with is gone now. And you can see some of that merriment almost come back to him. The other important thing that I think about that too is that he had a lasting impact on Velen. And you can see that in the comment that Velen makes when, you know, Illidan talks about, you know, the fate of our people. And Velen goes, the fate of our people, or the basically our destiny was never in the, or our fate in the hand, people was never in destiny's hands or whatever. It's a sort of moment where it's like Velen's like, yeah, I actually took your lessons to heart, where you said it's time for us to take control ourselves. You were right. That's going to have a lasting impact. And the other important thing is Velen then channels the light, which means that realization doesn't break him from that. He still has access to it. And it just adds to that sort of growth of that character. And I think that's cool, because it's probably the first time that Illidan had a positive impact on a character throughout his entire career as a hero.
Who really saw the whole buddy buddy thing between Illidan and Velen coming? Like,
right. That was so out there.
It was out there, but it worked really well. Rossi, what do you think?
I never thought Zero was pumping up Illidan in the first place. I always found her to be, and I've argued with everybody about this, and I still maintain that I was right.
And we had a lengthy discussion about this too on Lore Watch. So yeah, I'm right there with you.
I always felt like Zero had no perspective and was never actually trying to tell you what to think so much as trying to figure out what you thought. And her role in this was basically to be rejected. And I thought that was really well done when Illidan's like, no, I won't be the puppet you want. I won't. If I'm going to fight this, I'm going to fight it my way. I'm going to use the tools I've chosen. I'm going to be myself. And I don't think I've seen a lot of criticism that this was a redemption arc for Illidan. I don't think it was. I don't think Illidan was redeemed at any point, because he never backed away from what he did. He had reasons for what he did. That's not the same thing as saying what he did was always the right thing to do. And it's like, really, like, there's a point in the expansion where you're like going through the various Zero things, and you see the moment where he gets his eyes burned out by Sargeras, and he says, I realized at that moment there was nothing we could do. There was nothing we could do. If we won that war, they'd still be out there. If we went and beat them again, there would still be more of them. It'd be an endless, endless wave, and there was no way to win if we kept fighting like we were. And that's the bit in the cinematic where he basically says to Velen, the hunter is nothing without the hunt.
He quotes Maiev.
That's Maiev right there, yeah.
And wasn't that what he said to her?
No,
too, isn't?
She said that
no, that's
to
what
him.
She said to him. Yeah.
Okay. Well, there's that whole bit where he says that. He says, the hunter is nothing without the hunt.
No. He did say that to her. Excuse me.
Yeah, I thought that was him to her.
He said, the hunter is nothing without the hunt, and you are nothing without me.
Yeah, and when he
and
when
that
he
kind
says
of set
here,
her off on her whole where she went.
Yeah. And when he says it here, he says it in this, like, just this tone of, you know, yeah, I could leave with you, but this is what I'm for. This is what I chose. This is the path I walked. It leads here. And when they pull Sargeras in and he's there in front of him, Illidan's just, you know, at last, you know, he's ready for this. Whether or not I wouldn't say it's a good fate for him. I mean, it's certainly, you know, at best, he's going to be spending an awful long time fighting Sargeras and while trapped. But I think the things that happen after the cinematic, like the quest where you go and you deliver his last words to his brother and to Tyrande, I feel like Illidan finally moved past obsessed stalker wanting to be Tyrande's boyfriend. I feel like he moved past that, Like, I think that's one of the things the Legion novel, like the Elena novel, sets up. He still cared about her, but she wasn't. She was more like the way he cared about everybody. Like
It was no longer she was his whole universe.
Well, it's more like the world of Azeroth is too many people. Mm-hmm. It's too many people for Illidan to care about personally.
Or to kind of comprehend, even.
Yeah, it's too
Taranda
much.
Taranda was kind of that representation of everything that Azeroth was.
And he says in the letter, he says something like the effect of, you were always the best of us. Your faith, your steadfastness. And these are things he doesn't have. And that's fascinating to me, that despite the fact that he views himself as having neither faith nor steadfastness, and yet, where is he at the end? And that's because he's trying to be her.
I feel like Illidan, his story in particular, is a really interesting one, because I feel like, I mean, you go back all the way to the War of the Ancients. I feel like his story has been one of a person who was kind of choked by the weight of their own quote-unquote destiny. Like, he was born with it. He was born with the golden eyes. So everybody's always told him from day one, yeah, you're meant to be something really important. And he spent, like, the entirety of his life under that shadow, with that weight on his shoulders.
Yeah. If I'm
and
the so moment, important, yeah.
The moment,
if I'm so important, yeah, it's right.
The moment that he turned on Zira was the moment that he shrugged off that shadow and said, no, I get to choose. And I'm going to choose. And I'm going to choose what I feel is right. And I feel like what we saw at the end of Antorus was it a grim fate? Yeah. But it was his choice. And that made all the difference in the world. So I feel like it was a fitting end for him. And I really, like, that moment just between him and Velen in that cinematic was just, I don't know. There was something about it. It just, like, really hit me in a good way. I was like,
I've described it a couple times now as feeling like Lethal Weapon in a way, like the Riggs and Murtaugh. Like, they're, you know, Illidan's the crazy guy and Velen's the old, you know, I'm too old for this guy. And together they actually worked. They worked better than, like, so many other combinations in various, like, storylines. Velen and Illidan actually worked well together. They played well off each other. Illidan punctured a lot of Velen's, for lack of a better word, I don't want to say pretensions, but, like, the stuff he'd grown up believing.
I feel like Anduin started that process in Prophet's Lesson. Like, Anduin kind of pulled him out of that reflective funk, if you want to call it that, that Velen was dredged in, where he was just kind of obsessed with sorting through these visions and seeing the future. And Anduin's like, no, no, come back to right now, because things are happening and we need you. And that kind of started to pull Velen out of it. And I feel like Illidan pulled him the rest of the way out of it, and also in his own way, in his own really gruff kind of you want to smack him but you don't kind of way, helped Velen come to terms with the magnitude of what had happened to Argus, what had happened to Velen's home, and reach a resolution, like an internal resolution about it all. Because the thing is like, even when you know, Sargeras stabs the planet and pulls away and he's getting imprisoned or whatever, Velen's looking at this and he kind of sighs, but it's like this sigh of like, okay, we're done now. Like, it's not a panic or anything like that, and it's not like a heavy sigh. It's more like a relief kind of thing, which felt weird, but it felt like the weight of the world had been lifted off of Velen's shoulders, and maybe now he can move on. Does that make sense?
Kind of does, because you get that scene where the three of them, it's Velen, Magni, and Khadgar are in the ship as it's leaving.
Yeah.
And they're watching as Sargeras gets pulled off of Azeroth.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's just that one moment where Sargeras turns to stare at where the beam is coming from, and the three of them are just standing there watching this. And I got to think at least one of them, like maybe Khadgar, at least Khadgar is going to be like, I do not believe what I'm looking at.
I know.
Because it's right there. It's like, he's the size of the planet. What are we doing, man? Oh, my.
And meanwhile, Velen's just like, yep, this is what happens in the universe.
I remember what showed up the last time, yeah.
Yeah. That's, I don't know. I felt like Illidan finally got the story that he didn't get in Burning Crusade. This story kind of told everything that I wanted to hear from Burning Crusade. And we got, I do appreciate the Illidan novel in particular, because the novel told us a lot more about Burning Crusade than Burning Crusade did. And a lot more of what Illidan was doing while Burning Crusade was going on. I highly recommend that novel, by the way. If any of our listeners haven't read that yet, you should go read that. Particularly if you want to see how Burning Crusade and Legion tie together, because they do. They really do. So it's sort of like this was Burning Crusade Part 2, almost.
I actually really like that as a thought, because I feel that Legion really was the absolute continuation of everything that started back in Burning Crusade.
Yeah, but it was really satisfying. Like, I think that this was a satisfying ending. What do you think, Rossi? Was this satisfying?
It was certainly satisfying, but one of the things I think is that we're kind of selling it short by saying it's the continuation of Burning Crusade.
We are, but I mean, that's this. Like big aspect of it.
No, but here's the thing. Burning Crusade itself was just a continuation of Warcraft 1 and 2. And what we just got with Legion, when Sargeras gets pulled off the planet and jammed in his prison, that is the end of something that's been hanging around Warcraft as a setting since it started.
Before World of Warcraft.
Before Warcraft 3. This is something that was a big part of Warcraft 1 and 2. Sargeras has been around forever. He's been an omnipresent threat forever. The reason the Horde exists is because of the Burning Legion. The reason that orcs are green. All this stuff. Like, think about what a huge moment this is. Is it a satisfying ending? Yes, but it's also like, it's like the slamming shut of a door that's like 1,000 miles across. It's just a sound. In a way, the only way to do it would be to have that moment where you see Sargeras stab Azeroth, because that's the only thing that conveys the sheer size of what just happened.
Oh, yeah.
Is having that giant figure go, no. And I don't even know if he was trying, like, we don't even know what he was trying to do there. Like, was he trying to kill Azeroth? Was he trying to jam his sword into it so he could hold on to it? Like, what was he doing?
He was trying to corrupt Azeroth. Like, that was his whole endgame thing.
I know that. But I mean, specifically the bit with the sword. I don't know what the intent there is. Was he just trying to kill the planet? What was he doing?
Well, I think that the intent there was that obviously his plans did not work. He could not convert Azeroth. So in order to prevent it from becoming a Void Titan, he tried to kill it. Because it was like, we can't do things my way. Okay, we're going to do things my way that one time that I cut a planet in half.
It's interesting to me because a lot of people have pointed out where he stabbed is interesting.
I know.
Zolthus, yeah.
He's like, that's problematic on a number of levels. I have a hypothetical question for you guys, but I think I'll just present that at the end of this here. So go ahead and talk about the swords more and where it's located. Go nuts, you guys. Do what you do.
I think, let Joe talk in a little bit. I just wanted to basically the sword is, as far as we know, based on like stuff I've seen tweeted by people at Blizzard, the sword is Gorrible. It is the sword of Sargeras. And he drove it into Silithus, and it's taking up most of Silithus. Like it's hard to say where in Silithus he stabbed, because it's hard to say where in Silithus he didn't stab.
Ankaraj is still there.
Yeah, but that's pretty much it.
Everything else, everything north of Ankaraj, Cenarion Hold, everybody that was living out there at the time, all of the Scorpids, the dude that you used to summon Thunderon, all of that, bye-bye.
Yep.
Yeah, there's a giant freaking hole with a big sword sticking out of
it. It's a zone-wide hole.
A giant lava-filled hole, essentially.
And, it's a sword-filled hole. It's a sword. It's a big sword. It's like...
The sword is like...
You can see it from Thunder Bluff.
Yeah, it is using every bit of that new draw distance they put in.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like they put that in just so people could see that sword from a distance. Because, it is enormous. It is... You remember, when you go to the... Oh, bloody heck. It's in the Eastern Kingdoms. It's where the Twilight's Hammer raid was. Bastion of Twilight. That zone. I can't remember the name off the top of my head.
The Twilight Highlands?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I should just say Bastion of Twilight. When you go to Bastion of Twilight, you had to fly up to the top.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's that
and
place.
It's very tall.
It's so tall that when you try to fly there, if you're not close enough to it, you hit the ceiling and your mount won't go up any higher until you get closer.
Yeah.
They had to add more distance. The sword is like 4 times taller than that. Easily. It's very tall.
And that's, Bastion of Twilight is very high up. anybody who's done Cataclysm and flown to Bastion of Twilight, you know how high up that is.
It takes a while to fly up to it. That's how big it is. Like, it like, you go, okay, well, I'll just hold space for now.
I can't even comprehend the size of that sword if it's four times that.
I'm just estimating. I don't actually know, but it's big.
Well, you could actually see, like, they're because Ankaraj isn't gone, it's, yeah, like, the sword's close enough. We will have a size scale comparison that we can compare it to. Screenshots right now aren't doing a whole lot because we're not, it hasn't physically really been there for everybody. Like, I can't go and fly there and see that yet. But
yeah,
once
you have
I can.
To basically, yeah, either when LFR is done and has come out fully, or when you kill, yeah, you know, Argus and get to see that and that final cinematic.
It unlocks, like Argus unlocked for people.
Yeah. The thing that I'm interested in really with the sword, though, is I'm kind of curious if he missed. Like, I'm wondering if that.
Well, the planet's not dead, but we've been told that Battle for Azeroth, the planet is bleeding, and we're like collecting its essence in,
sure,
these necklaces and trying to bring it back together.
But think about it, right? Like, his entire goal is to, and you sort of brought this up, like, his entire goal is to destroy the void. He doesn't want the void to be a thing. And before we ripped him off the planet, he was communing with Azeroth. Like, I mean, he was that cloud monster sort of enveloping it. But you can't tell me that a Titan, even a corrupted one like Sargeras, couldn't see or sense or smell if something was off, right? And we've quote unquote killed a few of the old gods, which we know are all sorts to be this corrupting agent for the planet. We've had that sort of verified all throughout Legion as well, and as soon as we completed the Emerald Nightmare. What if he wasn't aiming for Silithus? What if he was aiming to try to kill whatever last old god was left on the planet?
Like, he was aiming for Nazoth?
Like, he was aiming for Nazoth and just missed because we happened to pull him away from his bullseye. So, because a sword that big, and you said it yourself, he could split a planet in half. Even being pulled, he could have killed Azeroth if he really wanted to. I fully believe that. I think he wasn't trying to kill Azeroth. Because from the beginning, I think he was trying to sway Azeroth or bring Azeroth to his side. She hasn't been born yet, despite what level of conscious thought she has. She hasn't been born yet. So he could tell her, you know, your fight's about to come. I'm going to make sure that you are free of this corruption, but you have to finish the fight. I don't think he was trying to kill her. I think he was going for the last old god, because we know Titans can kill them. They just don't want to, because they think that it'll destroy everything. I think Sargeras knows more than we think he does at this point.
Anything to add to that, Rossi?
I'm not so sure he missed so much as we don't know what he was trying to do. I think missed. I keep wondering what his goal was with that attack. Was he just trying to blow up the planet? Was he just trying to wound the planet? Was he trying to say, I don't. If he was aiming for an old god, he wasn't aiming for Nazoth. Because there's an old god right where he hit.
Maybe.
Because C'Thun's tentacles go out underneath, you know.
Well,
the old gods are enormous. Their tentacles go out underneath where they're imprisoned.
That's
so
true.
There's but no chance he didn't hit C'Thun.
But what if Nazoth is doing that thing where, let's say theoretically, we completely made the old gods that we fought so far dormant. We know that there was no love between the old gods. What if Nazoth was going to claim that dormant power? What if Nazoth is trying to go supercharge himself? What if he's going to go to C'Thun and all of those other places, to Yogg-Saron and stuff like that?
I don't think we even made them dormant, and here's why. In Cataclysm, Bastion of Twilight is being run by Cho'Gall. Cho'Gall is directly invoking the Master, and the Master is C'Thun. As long as they're around, there's like, I don't think any of them are done. I think at any moment,
sure,
all three of them could come up. And Nazoth getting up in the next, whenever he does, like, you know, we know that Nazoth is awake now. The other two weren't asleep in the first place. So I don't know. There's a lot we don't know yet. But one thing is absolutely clear to me. The point you made about Sargeras being able to destroy the planet is well made. He has destroyed planets before. He could absolutely destroy this one.
And
so,
he had the opportunity to do so before we pulled him off of it, but he didn't.
Well, he definitely, before we pulled him off of it, he felt he'd won. Like, he had no reason to do it. He'd won. He was there. He made it to Azeroth.
But,
was created. He assumed Argus was going to kill off the rest of the Pantheon, and he was going to have Azeroth. He didn't have any reason to do anything.
But we also, We also don't know what he did in the meantime between him and Azeroth, right?
That's true. We don't know that. There's a lot we don't know. We don't know even what...
We don't know if he was trying to corrupt her or if he was just whispering sweet nothings or saying, hey, baby, I'm home or what.
Yeah, really just there's so much more going on here. We know that the Seat of the Pantheon was in the Great Dark Beyond itself. It wasn't around Argus, like the planet. Obviously, right. Argus the Titan appeared there. But the Seat of the Pantheon was out in the Great Dark Beyond. There's so much, like, I feel like there's so much left to be done. Like, the Titans themselves, we just got to see echoes of them. We didn't get to see them in their full. The only one we got to see in his full was Sargeras himself. That's the only one we saw in full manifestation. Even Argus. Argus wasn't in full manifestation. Argus wasn't fully realized. He even calls it my broken world.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, I don't, you know, I'm sitting here kind of stammering because the sheer amount of it just becomes impossible to really quantify.
Okay.
Totally unrelated. I do want to ask one thing. Did anybody else think that they called Metzen back to voice Amenthul? Because it totally sounded like him.
I don't know, but there's always that possibility. However, we are running out of time here, so we should probably start wrapping it up. Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch, and your continued support means that this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience. And for you guys, the listeners of Lore Watch, Audible's offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. They have several Blizzard titles. I know that we mentioned Illidan, like the novel Illidan, in the podcast here. That's one of the ones that they have available in audiobook format, and you can pick that up with as your free audiobook with that 30-day trial. If you're interested in checking that out or any of Blizzard's other titles or any of the tons and tons and tons of other books that they have available, you can do that by signing up at blizzardwatch.com/audible. As far as the expansion goes, actually, no, before I get into this, if you guys have any questions, obviously we didn't get to any emails today. I had a list, but we kind of went all over the place, so I'm sorry we didn't get to them. However, if you have any questions for Lore Watch, specifically surrounding the end of the Legion expansion, Antorus, all of that, you can send those to podcast@blizzardwatch.com. Just be sure to put Lore Watch in the subject line so that we know that it's intended for the show. And then next episode, we'll go ahead and dig back into the mailbag and get to you guys' questions, because I know there were already some there waiting. We'll get to those first. Final thoughts here, though. I have a question for you guys, and this is kind of a hypothetical, right? Okay, so Sargeras is a Titan, but he's also this being of, like, seething hatred and everything, right? And malevolence, whatever, what have you.
Sure.
Bad guy, right? Do you think that Battle for Azeroth and the fighting between the factions, do you think that's something that's just naturally coming to a head? Or do you think that the fact that Sargeras plunged his weapon into the world, that the presence of that weapon is what is fomenting that aggression somehow? I told you it was a hypothetical.
I believe that it is within the realm of possibilities, because we don't understand what that weapon is. We see that it is created through the manifestation of his power, which essentially means that it is a part of him. So a part of him exists outside of that prison. And if it is carrying that essence, sure, maybe that's the case. My question is to that, if that is the case, how far does that power radiate? Because we know that this war rages across the entirety of Azeroth. Everybody sort of feels these aggressive tendencies.
Well, how deep did the sword go? We don't know.
Right. We don't know that either. So I'm curious if that's the case, or and this is the other thing. If the sword being there is simply causing the agitation of Azeroth, and because we are all creatures essentially created by Azeroth in one manner or another, we are children of Azeroth. That is exactly what Amenthul refers to us as, children of Azeroth. If we are just feeling the effects of that discomfort.
That's what I mean by the whole fomenting that aggression. Like, it's got something to do with it. It's radiating.
I don't think maybe it's not the sword itself that's causing it, but the fact that it's an open wound like that.
Okay. What do you think, Rossi?
If it's Gorbal,
mm-hmm.
if it's the actual one-half weapon that was once the great weapon he used before and it broke in fighting with Amenthul, with Aggramar,
mm-hmm.
then by definition, it's broken. It's a it's a weapon that he reforged to match his new self. That means he basically, this is a guy who is exploding from within. He's a volcano. He's like worse than, do you remember how Deathwing had that problem where his like
malevolence
was making him explode from within? Sargeras has that a million times worse. He's got literal volcanoes erupting off of his skin. He's constantly cracking open. His choices have destroyed him. And he's incapable of seeing it. He very much is, he's almost the patron saint of this idea you see over and over again in Warcraft of people who snap and then try to prove everybody else would make the same decisions. You know, and I think we're seeing a lot of, whether or not the sword itself is doing so magically, or as Joe pointed out, because the world itself is injured and is screaming, or what. I mean, that's something we'll find out in due time. But I don't think it's a coincidence that Sargeras shows up and everybody wants to fight. I think to a certain degree, Sargeras is like a personification of everybody wants to fight. That's what he is. He is, you know, he's rage. You know, he had a perfect goal. He had a perfect purpose back when he was, you know, in the Pantheon. He had a perfect, and by perfect, I literally mean the old Latin sense of completed purpose. He knew what to do and he did it. And he never questioned it. He never thought it was unnecessary until it got broken on him and he broke. And everything he's done since is in the assumption that the universe is broken and needs to be purified. He doesn't view the cycle of things as the way it should be. He thinks it's all gone wrong. It's all broken and I have to clean it up. I have to fix it. So
we need to unplug it and plug it back in again.
Yeah, the router. However you want to look at it, though. That sword being here is a really bad thing.
Sargeras is the worst IT agent ever.
Yeah. But that sword being there in Silithus, I mean, whether or not he was aiming an old god, whether or not he was just trying to stab the planet, whatever he was doing, that sword being there all by itself is a terrible thing. Because think about it. It's a Titan artifact unlike anything we've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
It's a piece of one. And it's just sticking into the planet. I think the Azerite might be the least of our problems.
Okay, well, that wraps us up for the show. Thanks, you guys, so much for listening, and we will see you again in 2 weeks.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.